The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Bengals beat writers, fantasy football failure Fletcher Page and Paul Dana Jr. take you inside Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go.
All right, welcome into the latest therapeutic edition of the Bengals Beat Podcast, the BBP, presented as always by our friends and makers of delicious beer at 50 West Brewing Company. Even Optimistic Bobby can't help this situation. This is strictly my man Fletcher Page and I putting you on the couch. This is therapy. This is an hour on the couch. We're going to talk it. We're going to talk through this. Everyone's going to get through this together. We're going to work the problem, and we're going to find out it's about your childhood. Right?
That's right.
That's what it always comes back to, right? Whenever you really start digging into something that's got you messed up, it's about your childhood. It's about the stolen years.
Trauma.
That's why if you're sitting here and you're my age, you're now in my late 30s, so I'm 38. It goes back to the 90s, right? If you're in your 50s or 60s, it goes back to remembering how good it can be in the 80s.
Oh, you lucky dogs.
You lucky dogs. You have those Who Dey beer cans, and you have those memories of the Super Bowl, even though they lost. Or if you're a young buck, it goes down to the fact that you've never seen a playoff win in your existence, and it is killing you. Because 10-year-old you is just as sad as 24-year-old you, and that's why we're here to talk through this and make it happen. Fletcher, how are you doing?
All things considered, I'm doing relatively well.
Yeah, well, compared to where Bengals fan base, Bengals Twitter, Bengals social media is at right now.
Well, just my mind is tied to Paul Brown Stadium. I don't have my heart wrapped up in this.
Yeah, that's
thing.
True.
So
hearts are stomped out and bleeding across the greater Cincinnati area and beyond. Our friends in Sweden. Let's not forget right. The Swedish Minute. Our friends in Sweden that love the Bengals, their hearts are bleeding out too, all over the ice. We love them. All right, we have a lot to get to today. This is basically an emergency BBP, but in the standard BBP section, because this franchise is in a state of emergency. Like, we're calling in the National Guard, which I don't know who that is yet.
I was trying to come up with a nice face for the National Guard that we'd be calling in.
Yeah, but Andy Benoit.
That works.
It's who we got. Andy Benoit from MMQB and Sports Illustrated is going to come on later and break down a little bit of what he sees on the tape. He does such incredible work. You know, he is really the Greg Cosell of our generation and incredible at looking into the film. So he has some observations about what has gone wrong, what is going wrong, and a very interesting quote he brings up, I think, that you're really going to enjoy. So that's coming up. Pro Football Focus, Austin Gale, taking a big picture look at Andy Dalton's season and a couple interesting nuggets about that that I think will surprise people. So really good stuff from Austin Gale and our friends at PFF also coming up today. And we are going to jump into the questions. Who is to blame and what does it mean? There is one question that really matters, and that is what will become of Marvin Lewis because of this debacle. Okay, Andy Dalton, ligament injury to his right thumb. He goes on injured reserve on Monday, the day after the Bengals get absolutely destroyed, punked, and demoralized by the Cleveland Browns, who break a 25-game road losing streak. Just think about that. By beating the crap out of the Bengals and dancing and making fun of them to their faces.
And who have a winning record since firing Hugh Jackson.
This is correct. Bengals, since hiring Hugh Jackson, are 0-2. And since firing their defensive coordinator, it is all a mess. And it has sent Bengals fans, understandably, into the latest form of exasperation at this franchise. When is it going to be time to move on? Everyone assumed it would be last year, and everyone was disappointed. And thousands upon thousands, almost 10,000 season ticket holders, flooded away from this team. And here they are again, coming to the crossroads.
But the question is, when is it going to be time? It already has been before.
Right. When will it actually happen?
That's the question.
Yeah. So last year, I'm going to do my best to answer this because it's impossible. It's answering an impossible question. And we talked about this in the walkout a little bit. Only one man matters, his opinion on this, and that is Mike Brown. And when he and Marvin Lewis sit down the day after the season ends, to me the question will be this. How much of this will get attributed and washed away to injuries? Oh, injuries doomed us this year. And how much of this will be directed to the person responsible for overcoming those things? And in year 16 of not doing it, and year 3 in a row of almost certainly being below 500, I'll give you a chance. Here's the question I'm asking anybody that will listen to me this week. From 1 to 10, 1 being no responsibility and 10 being sole responsibility, how much responsibility for where this team is at today is due to injury?
Okay, I have to answer this with nuance. I'm pushing that button because I think on the offensive side of the ball, I would almost give it an 11. I think it's pretty clear what Andy Dalton was doing through the first 5 games. He was 4-1. His numbers, the numbers that I look at, which are attempts per, you know, pass and completion percentage, things like that, they were all above his career averages. So the injuries to Tyler Eifert, and then they started adding up with Ross, Geo, and it culminated with
Mixon, AJ.
Yep. Yeah, we've got to bring them all up again. But
Billy Price.
Yeah, so
Tyler Cross.
Offensively, I just feel like whatever Bill Lazor wanted to do in August, he was not able to do by October.
Yeah, they're a completely different team.
Right.
Offensively.
So I'll give that a 10 for injuries for the offense. But for the defense, I know Carl Lawson, losing him hurts. But I feel like this defensive unit, which was supposed to be a strength, you guys talked about it in the offseason. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of expectations. I feel like this defense was doomed from the jump. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was going to be bad. It was going to keep getting worse. And we've seen a defensive coordinator go. We've seen Marvin come in, and it's not gotten better.
No. And it's going to continue to be
bad. I would give the injury excuse there like a 1. So I'm going to come out to like a 6.
A 6. And inevitably, I mean – You can only wonder. We never really know. I mean, how many more wins do they have? You know, Nick Vigil, I think, is the one that hurt the most on defense, and he never has really been able to. I mean, he's missed a huge portion of the schedule. Do they beat Pittsburgh? You know, do they? I think they beat Baltimore. I think they beat Baltimore with AJ. I think that's enough. But. Maybe they beat Pittsburgh if they have a couple other guys healthy. Maybe.
Well, so you're hinting at compounding misery because once you lose that Steelers game, once you lose the Baltimore game, then you're starting to see
the spiral.
That's when the momentum and the effort and the body language starts to creep in.
Inevitably, it falls on one person to not let things spiral and to not let injuries be the reason you lose games. And when you talk about Pittsburgh and when you talk about Baltimore, despite all the injuries, you're competitive, you're right there, but you weren't good enough to get over the hump. And, you know, good coaches find and good coaching staffs find ways to do that. And clearly that's not what's happening here. You know, it's I give it about a 5.2 because I'm going to say a little more than half. Mainly because, you know, the offense probably could have kept carrying this team a little bit. And I think Vigil is bigger than people really realize because their linebackers, as everyone watching this team knows, are complete garbage. They're complete garbage. They can't cover anyone. At least Nick Vigil was making a few plays and could cover some people. And you would hide. If you hadn't, it would hide the, how completely exposed you've been at that position this year.
I think Preston Brown, though, hurts them more because we really never saw Preston healthy this year.
Correct.
With the ankle and then the knee. Because they don't have a middle linebacker. I mean, Hardy Nickerson goes from playing 100% of the snaps at Baltimore, and then he goes to the scout team in practice and doesn't play hardly at all against the Browns, and they have Tez in there. What are they going to do at middle linebacker? Besides just ride it out.
The rest of the season? Who cares? The rest of the season is merely 5 weeks that have to happen until this decision is made.
I mean, you get Vigil back and he slides in there for Vinny Ray.
Whatever. They should play young guys at this point. See who's got something. See who – I mean, shoot, play Malik Jefferson, play any young guy. It doesn't matter. The season is over, right? I mean
– Yeah.
The season was over before we knew Andy Dalton's –
ligament. It was over at 28-0.
It was over at 28-0. The season ended. And, you know, not having your team able to go down 28-0 in your own house against the Browns is not an injury thing. That is a coaching thing. Now, I don't know what Mike will think. I don't know if – because to me it was unfathomable that you would bring Marvin back last year. Yet here we are. So to think that, well, it's obvious, you know, I don't know. And I don't know if they will look. I know that last year what was on the table was they beat Detroit to kick them out of the playoffs. They beat Baltimore to kick them out of the playoffs. And Mike hung his hat on that. This year's thing, the hanger, the loop, it is the injury thing. That is where it's hanging. So I don't it's an interesting question, and you know, the sense you get the sense if you talk to enough people that you just can't blame injuries. It's an easy out, it's an easy excuse. It certainly plays a role. You cannot tell the story of this season without talking about the insane list of people. You have basically half of their two deep from early in the season has missed multiple games or is on IR. They have, what, 12, 13 guys on IR?
It's easily the most injured season in the franchise's history.
Yeah.
Because I had dug into those numbers 2 weeks ago, and it was close.
Now you throw in all this stuff in. Yeah, I mean, you throw all this stuff in, and it's over the top. And that's fine, and that's tough to overcome. It doesn't excuse exposing the fact that this coach – could not overcome that. So people are mad. And look, I want to address a couple of things real quick. Can I address blame the medical staff guy?
Oh, yeah. Let it rip.
Well, this exacerbates me. It kills me. First of all, you mentioned the story that you wrote about injuries a couple weeks ago. The Bengals actually were better than the league average in average games lost to injury. So, you know, players, games, starters are ranked a little higher than others. A better than the league average every year from 2011 to 2016. And in 2015 and 2016, they were basically in the top five of the NFL for the fewest injuries. They had modified their program a little bit and really saw a lot of success from that too. 2014, they had a lot of injuries, but they were still actually at AGL right around the league average. Last year, they were a tick above it. This year, they're probably going to be one of the four worst teams in football, right up there with Atlanta, Green Bay. There's a few other teams that are really beat up.
Those are all teams that are underachieving.
Teams that are underachieving, because that's what happens. So, you know, what do you want? I tweeted this out. Did you? These are. It's not like these are injuries that are preventable. So AJ Green should have been doing toe raises, and Andy Dalton should have been playing thumb war, right? Every day, every morning, he should have been waking up doing thumb war with Jeff Driskel. Keep the thumb strong.
Jeff's nimble.
Jeff is who would wear in a thumb war? When's the last time you participated in a thumb war?
It's been a little bit.
You should have been doing it every day, or you're not going to be able to type soon.
Thought you were going to challenge me.
I'll thumb war you right now, right here. Here
Let's
we go. Ready?
Got. All
right. 1, 2, 3, 4, I declare a thumb war. That was a sad attempt. See, you might have broken my thumb.
Yeah, I'm kind of like a
Because I'm weak. I'm clearly weak there.
I'm shifty.
You have good reach. That was a live podcast thumb war, people. Don't say you don't get the good stuff here on the BBP. So, my point is, should Carl Lawson have been taking ACL non-contact awareness classes?
Dead ball.
I mean, you know, should Tyler Eifert have been like, you know, how to avoid disgusting, awful ankle dislocations?
Traumatic injury prevention is a real thing.
I mean, should Tony McCray have been like focused on not going to the hospital with a concussion? Like, look, blame the medical staff is the laziest, dumbest. This is football. This is the NFL. This is football. Have you tried to get close to the action? Try to get and tell me how scary it is getting near an NFL. It is frightening out there. Darquist Denard almost died. if the sternoclavicle, if the collarbone goes one way instead of the other way, it goes and cuts across serious organs. Like, this is, let's not act like this is stuff that if just the training staff was giving massages out every day, his collarbone wouldn't have cracked in half. I mean, for the love of Christ, that stuff drives me mad. If there was a consistent run of this, if we had 5 years of proof that they just are constantly hurt more than other teams, we can talk about this. That is not the case. They were a better than league average from 2011 to 2016. They've now had a year they were basically right around league average, a tick above, and now they're going to have a really ugly year. It happens. Sorry.
No, it's all good. I thought your rant was surgical.
Yeah.
That's a medical reference.
Oh, look at you. Well done. Sorry.
I think if
it's better when you have to explain it.
I know that John Ross had the groin and Josh Malone had the hamstring.
Yeah.
So if you had more of those soft tissue types, maybe you could criticize the players or the staff.
Yeah.
But not the dislocated
ACL.
Fractured
dislocated
ankle.
ACLs, crazy thumb injuries.
Not a lot of drills.
Dalton's
you can
got weak
do.
Thumbs.
Well, there's not a lot of drills you can do for a 255 pound linebacker falling on your ankle.
Yes. We were discussing earlier how tough it is to pick up a football that's out there on the run.
I think it is.
It is the most dangerous thing. Forget like getting hit running over the middle. It's the most dangerous thing you could do.
Well, I had this. We actually, for our Christmas tree this year, we went to a farm and I cut it down. And while I was cutting it, I was like, this is one of the more awkward things that I could do personally. And I'm not very good at this. And I laid with it and got it done. But picking up a football is one of those things in life. If it's moving and you're running full speed, mm-hmm. that no matter how athletic you are, there's a good chance you could look like an idiot or injure yourself in the process of doing it.
A very good chance. You don't want to. It doesn't look good if a tree falls on you. You know what happens if a tree falls on you?
You die.
Oh.
Oh, if it's a Christmas tree.
Which Christmas tree? Yeah. I was. Yes.
I don't know how big
like
the tree
timber.
Is.
Yes. I was going to say you end up on America's Funniest Home Videos.
Exactly.
Which I would have made a Bob Saget reference. I know he doesn't host it anymore. Who hosts? I assume Steve Harvey does. He hosts everything.
Oh, yeah. I'd watch
Steve. No, Alfonso Ribeiro does.
Okay.
Carlton.
Yeah.
He's a great host. You don't need there's like 18 America's Funniest Home Videos because everything's on videos now. So there's 18 of those shows now, like Ridiculousness and what? You got a point.
No, I got another thing that's awkward in life, no matter how good other things you are. Hibachi grill when they flip the vegetable into your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
You feel like an idiot even if you get it done.
Yeah.
You know, because you're sort of. You're like a center fielder, but an idiot center fielder.
You a big
fielder.
Hibachi grill guy?
No. That because I'm I because
you're nervous. You get nervous.
I dread this moment.
Yeah, dread. I just don't like communal tables.
I don't like it either.
I came with my people that I wanted to talk to.
I have a funny hibachi story I can tell one day. I'll tease that for the off season.
We'll get to that. One where we had more time. So anyway, I've been asked. I have now pinned this tweet to the top of my Twitter page in case you want to go there and look at it. It is my answer to the what will happen with Marv question because we have 5 weeks of this. And my point is this. My gut says that it will come down to what we already know. It will come down to Mike and Marv in that room. I think Mike is pushed further to consider making this move than he has been, even more so than last year, because the empty stadium right in front of his face is hard to miss. That does affect him. He does see that. And I think last year he did not see that. I remember after I wrote a bunch of stuff about how angry the fan base was, basically being accused by a lot of people over there of over-exaggerating how angry the fan base was. And then the season ticket holder thing happened, and the stadiums that you've seen this year has happened. The toxicity of the fan base has been more apparent. And I think it's been more in their face. It's been more in Mike's face this year, the fan base being unhappy with this and this guy as their head coach. So I would say I think there's more of a chance, but no one really knows. No one really knows. And yes, the possibility that the injuries are used as an excuse is in play. But we don't know. Nobody knows. We'll wait, and we will sit there and find out, along with everybody else, what Mike decides when this year is over. That's my thought on that. There it is. I will probably have to repeat that a number of times. How many BBPs are we going to do between now and that?
At least
5,
six.
15, count walkouts, 14?
Are you counting 13,
not counting
today?
Counting
the deuce, okay.
Well, I mean, is that not going to be the only topic that matters over the next 5 weeks?
That's correct. I mean, I was going to talk about middle linebacker, but you just...
can we talk about what's going to happen to middle linebacker? Still Let's talk about if Vinny Ray should slide over.
Should at least wear the headset.
It doesn't matter.
You're gonna wake Hugh Jackson up from his office nap.
Can you save this? The room is on fire. Do you have a hose? He does not have a hose. No one has a hose. It's just burning.
There's no water.
Fire. Bum, 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 bum. It's just fire everywhere. It's just a fire everywhere. All right. I want to talk a little bit about Andy Dalton and his season and his future when we come back. But the perfect way to preface that is to bring in Pro Football Focus and Austin Gale, where we kind of dive into some of the numbers they found about Dalton and his season. Also some on Geno Atkins in there too. So I want to here's Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus as we kind of look at the big picture of Andy Dalton's season.
All right, it is that time again. We check in with our great friends over at Pro Football Focus, based in Over the Rhine, and that means catching up with Austin Gale. Austin, how are we doing?
Doing great, man. Enjoying the snow.
Yes, it is officially snowing. The Christmas decorations are out everywhere. It's officially 'tis the season time. And in recent years around here, that means pretty much eliminating from the playoffs time. So with snow and Christmas decorations, we have playoff eliminations. So I want to kind of take a big picture a little bit today and look a little bit at the two of the most prominent players on this Bengals roster, one on each side of the ball. Let's start with Andy Dalton. He goes on IR on Monday, and his season comes to an end 11 games in. Early in the year, you know, people were talking, oh, AJ Green, he's playing like an MVP-type conversation, and people were applauding him, and he certainly was playing very well late in games in particular. When you take a look at these 11 games as a whole, where does this sit grade-wise and relevant analytic-wise across his, you know, his career stat lines?
When it's all said and done, this guy has a grade that ranks 11th among qualifying quarterbacks. But this was a guy that, when with A.J. Green, when he was healthy, was a top 10 QB. You think I saw a dramatic, you know, fallout when A.J. Green wasn't healthy and he had to force the ball to some other receivers. I think having A.J. Green and the rise of Tyler Boyd and Joe Mixon be able to balance it all out really helped Andy Dalton. I think he's a guy that we've seen in years past that when he has good surrounding talent, including the offensive line, A.J. Green, Joe Mixon, he can make plays. But when he lost A.J. Green, I think you saw a drop off of play, and that's why he finishes at 11th. And when you look further at the analytics, he was the guy that ranked 25th in pass rating from a clean pocket. He wasn't taking advantage of those clean pockets by throwing big-time throws, getting touchdowns, and really maximizing the potential of a clean pocket was what is kind of what we call it in terms of getting that pass rating up when there is no pressure in your face. And then when you look at pressure in his face, he ended up ranking middle of the pack around 17th. I think him not being able to elevate his play from a clean pocket, specifically without A.J. Green, really hurt this team in terms of being able to go toe-to-toe with some of the bigger point scorers. I think that's something you wish he could have improved while he was out here. Was he having a career year? I think absolutely. But I think it was a little too roller coaster for, you know, him to really, if he was going to finish out this season without A.J. Green for an extended period, I'm not sure how much better he would have gotten. I think it's hard to really evaluate him now that he is on the IR, but there are some concerns with what he did, even though he did end up finishing 11th in grades.
Yeah. When you look at his career, where did this rank for him come from? Obviously, 2015 was clearly his best year, and if you look at, you know, NFL passer rating, more of your standard sort of old-school stat, most years he winds up somewhere between 86 and 91, and then he's kind of been the same except for the one outlier year of 2015. Now, I think he's up at 89 and some change this year by NFL rating. Well, what was his grade this year compared to the rest of the years of his career?
I think you could argue with, you know, because the sample size are going to be limited compared to other seasons, that this is his second best or third behind that 2015 year that was stellar. Mm. That this is his second or maybe third best when it all comes done because of the injury, given how well he played. And one thing we did talk about before is how well he avoided turnovers. He was really good at avoiding turnover worthy throws. Yes, he had, you know, that 4-pick game, but not all of those were his fault. I think he did a good job of protecting the football, but I think if there were room for improvement, I think stretching the field a little bit more, trying to go after those big plays, maybe put the ball in harm's way here and there, but put more points on the board by taking more risks down the field, I think that's something you'd want to see from Andy Dalton coming back next year and moving forward if this Bengals offense is going to be as, you know, high-powered as it's capable of with all the skill positions they do have.
You mentioned turnover-worthy throws and him doing pretty well in that. What were some of the – how does that fall across the league and his career a little bit? Where did he land there?
So it's important to look at turnover-worthy plays from a clean pocket because, it, you know, sometimes with pressure can influence turnover-worthy plays, bad decisions, and an unfair look at kind of how a quarterback performed. When you look at how he performed in the clean pocket, he ends up finishing with just over 5, which is, you know, Tom Brady has 6, and Andy Dalton has 6 as well. You know, having that huge turnover-worthy throws through a 12-week season, Patrick Mahomes did at 6, with 6 turnover-worthy throws from a clean pocket, that's a good number to be at compared to guys that are throwing 8, 9. You see some guys up in the 12 range that are really struggling to that put the ball in harm's way when there's no pressure on their face and they're making mistakes, unpushed mistakes. I think Andy Dalton fell into that category where he wasn't doing that as often as some of the other, you know, poorer quarterbacks in the league. He was with Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes in that regard of protecting the football from a clean pocket. However, he wasn't with Mahomes and Brady in that regard, putting the ball in the end zone and driving that pass rating up by making big plays when he didn't have pressure in his face.
Yeah, really interesting. Good stuff on Dalton there. Let's talk about Geno Atkins. It's just I kind of was looking through his numbers. His Bengals are so dependent on that pass rush getting home and that front four that's out there being dominant that you noticed it. And I think early in the season you did. Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap were very disruptive in particular. And Geno, we were talking about him being on a pace for, you know, the all-pro type of seasons that he had in 2012 and 2015. Well, after 5 weeks, his numbers dropped off, didn't they?
Well, yes and no. I think he was off to such a crazy start that I think, you know, negative regression was expected, even though he is as good as he is. He was off to an insane start. He was off to an Aaron Donald-level start. There was a point in the season where Aaron Donald, who currently leads the NFL with 77 pressures, 11 more than any other player in the NFL, he had more pressures than Aaron Donald. I don't think he was ever going to keep that Aaron Donald pace, and he's fallen down. He's third in, at his position in total pressures. He ranks in the top five in pressure rate, top five in win rate. The guy is still stellar. I think the reason he maybe is not racking up the box score statistics and maybe not even as much pressure as he did at the start is he's doing it by himself. You know, he's really being asked to do a lot for that defense that was expected to have so many other guys that were drawing attention with Carlos Dunlap, Carl Lawson, obviously on the IR, didn't help anything. And I think you really expected this Bengals defensive line to be multifaceted and have so many weapons attacking the QB. But instead, it's really been Arnold, you know, acting shoulders, and he's played well. I mean, to have ranked third in total pressures at DI, ranked in the top five in both win rate, which counts how often you win the pass rush snap, not when you record a pressure, but when you beat the guy in front of you, and then still be in the top five in pressure rate as well, he still is having an outstanding season. I think sometimes it's easy, especially when you're not picking up sacks, to kind of think he's falling off, but I think he's still really, you know, producing at a high level, way above expectation for the position.
Yeah, yeah. Has the most people would look at it and say, hasn't had a sack since week five, but when you look a little deeper, it's not because he's not winning.
No, absolutely not. I think sacks are literally the most overrated stat. Look at Brandon Graham, who's our third-ranked edge defender in overall grade. He only has four sacks this year, but the guy is winning his blocks so often. He has such a high win rate, such a high pressure rate, that you can't discredit this guy. No, he's not being, you know, he's not able to finish, but he's forcing errant throws. He's, you know, which is almost, you know, this is a hot take, but forcing an errant throw or a bad decision by the quarterback is almost more valuable than a sack because of what that errant throw can become. It can be an interception. It can be, you know, a big miss and deflect it up and a turnover, and that's what's huge. And I think sacks can often be the, you know, the teller for any defensive lineman, but it's not, you know, what you should be basing your opinion off of Geno Atkins this year.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff, Austin. Really appreciate digging deep in the numbers. Hey, I appreciate it. If you want to get a little bit of peace and try to sound as intelligent as Austin, you can always throw yourself in to the Edge and the Elite. Make sure you pick that up. If you want to make some money, hit that green line so you can pay for your Christmas gifts. They'll give you all the gambling information that you need. So much stuff going on over at ProFootballFocus.com. Or you can just, like, when you're driving by over the Rhine, you see their office, just give them a wave. They're probably sitting in front of their computers and could use a little interaction.
That's 100% true. I'm in front of my computer a little too much.
Austin, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. Much thanks to Austin. That was a beefy, meaty, morsel-filled PFF segment. That might have been enough morsels to make a nugget.
Just cram them into a little ball.
Yeah. Wrap them up.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, how you make meatballs.
I think three morsels makes a nugget.
Whew. I don't know. I think morsels are smaller than you think.
Okay. Six morsels into a nugget.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you're not.
Three nuggets into a meatball.
Yeah. Yeah. I got you. I want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that he talked about and Andy Dalton. Some basics on Andy. So he is a free agent after the 2020 season. And, you know, when he signed that six-year, $96 million deal back in 2014, that extension, you know, the Bengals went in early on that and to kind of get a bargain, not necessarily in terms of money, because at the time that was probably about right for who Andy Dalton was. It was kind of in the middle ground, maybe a little higher money-wise. They got the bargain in structure. And so the structure is they have no dead money the next 2 years. He is essentially a year-to-year, completely take it if you want it. Yes, he's the highest-paid player. He's like about 16 cap hit and then about a 17 cap hit in 2020, which is the most on the team. But compared to the quarterback contract, Jimmy Garoppolo, getting up in the – they're up in the 30s now. I mean, you're looking at, you know – Kirk Cousins was 3 years, $90 million plus, all guaranteed, okay? I mean, we're talking, you know, Alex Smith had all that guaranteed money, and if anybody should be looking to as a comp, it's Alex Smith. Alex Smith and Andy Dalton are essentially the same guy. Solid, win you some games, not going to get you there. So that's the setup of this. I will tell you this. I don't see almost any scenario – well, I shouldn't say that. There, it is a small scenario where Andy Dalton is not back here next year. And even if they drafted a quarterback, they would want Andy as the bridge.
Right.
Yep.
And they would have no, they have the ability, if they felt like whoever they were to draft could take over in 2020, they could get out from under Andy if they felt like he was ready, or they could let the bridge go another year if they felt like he wasn't. They have a little bit of an advantage there if they did use whatever their pick is, or whatever they would, if they went into the top 10 or whoever they wanted to take, Dwayne Haskins or whatever. We'll get into many time, many hours to talk about that decision. He would still want to be here as a bridge. Now, the potential would be, you know, people would argue, and I would, and we've talked about this before, when they went to play Kansas City, the regret
of Mahomes.
Of trying to replicate the Patrick Mahomes scenario, right? Where you would draft, this would be the year you draft, quote unquote, Patrick Mahomes. He sits for a year. You trade Andy Dalton with 1 year left on his contract, a bargain deal, so to speak, by NFL standards, and get something back in return. I mean, you know, Kansas City, people forget they traded Alex Smith. They got a slot corner and a pick as well. And they were able to start Patrick Mahomes, and we see where they're at now. Anyway, all these scenarios really don't include Andy Dalton being gone. Now, if Marvin is gone,
right,
all bets are off, and that's the scenario where maybe Dalton isn't here, but I still think anybody that would come in new would want him here again as a bridge, unless they went out and signed somebody, which I just don't see. You still would have the same front office. That's not something that I would see them doing.
It could be Hugh Jackson. That's a topic for mid-December.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of this discussion, too. Sure. I mean, look.
Just a lot of familiarity.
Ugh. I wonder if that wouldn't, at this point, make fans just as mad.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think you would win over, like, you'd win over, like, 7% of the just anybody but Marvin's. But it's basically Marvin Part 2 if you hire Hugh. And he's, look, with what happened in Cleveland and with what has happened with his, like, media tour, and then Demarius Randle handing him the ball, and Baker Mayfield calling him out, it being apparent that no one believed in him there in Cleveland. Like, that's a tough sell. He started to really push pretty strongly into laughingstock status from a national level.
But if you're a fan, though, imagine scratching off a lottery ticket and it says you've won the prize. Now go scratch off your prize. And you scratch it off, and it's Hugh's face.
Yeah.
It's not exactly. You don't want to go cash that in.
No. Do I have to go back to the BP to get that?
Right.
Yeah, that's a scenario that obviously is in play. Again, we all the reasons that we know. I mean, it's just the perfect opportunity. The way the league is going to cut ties, bring in a young offensive guy, try to replicate, or even a young defensive guy, or even a Vic Fangio. Like, the young, progressive defensive minds are the next step, if you're looking at what the next step of this league is. Because the young, progressive offensive minds have taken over. It's somebody who's going to have the mind to counteract that,
right,
is really going to be the next level for this league. If you're really spinning this forward. And, Lord, the league needs it. 54-51. Is only fun for so long. Like, it's entertaining, and then it becomes a different game. It becomes a basketball game. It becomes a game where touchdowns don't matter and first halves don't matter. That's not entertaining. As entertaining as I just feel like it will get old. But that's not even the point. The point is, for teams to win, I think the next level of teams winning is not everyone trying to find every young offensive coach, because guess what? There's some depreciation there. Eventually, you get somebody who's not a good offensive coach.
Mm-hmm.
When you go far enough down the ladder, there's only so many Sean McVays.
It's no longer Matt Nagy. It's no longer a good investment opportunity.
Right.
It's already been bought.
Yes. You know, and there's guys out there. There aren't good offensive guys out there, and that should be in play. But you know, I just feel like, you know, it's obviously a great time if you want to start over. It's a clean start. I think a Hugh thing makes no sense, but you know, that doesn't mean that's not what's going to happen. Because it also won't accomplish the goal of winning your fans back. Like, that is the thing. If part of this is trying to fill that stadium, you better understand that Hugh Jackson ain't filling that stadium. Now, I don't know how much part of the discussion that is. It's part of it, but that's questionable. Anyway, I thought so. How did you feel? Like, this was your first year watching Andy Dalton. What was your impression? If I want to get back to the original topic.
Well, I saw Andy whenever it was at its best. I feel like his touchdown pass to AJ in Atlanta was the peak for this season, especially. But I think it was kind of indicative of what Andy could be whenever everything was flowing. Because Eifert had a touchdown that game, if I'm not mistaken, before he went out.
Mm-hmm.
Or he had a catch.
He did. He had a touchdown first half.
Yeah, he had a touchdown the first half. That offense looked great.
Gio had multiple scores.
Yeah. And then as he started losing weapons, I don't know how – I know the knock on him has always been that he doesn't enhance the team. You know, he's kind of enhanced by the team. But I just feel like by this point, he had no weapons. And I don't know how much I can knock him, but I don't feel in my heart that he can will you to a Super Bowl.
No. Probably not. Probably
it's just
not.
It's hard to grade him, though, this year. Given where the offense ended up with personnel.
I wonder what he'd look like under a different head coach, too. Yeah. How much of Andy Dalton's playoff struggles are due to Marvin's playoff struggles? How much of Marvin's teams always playing tight in big mm-hmm. spots and always shrinking in the moment have contributed to Andy Dalton? Because I watch him in the moment this year when games on the line – and watch him go win games, and his even keelness plays to his advantage in those big moments. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much Marvin's team's always struggling in big moments is become why people knock Andy. Now, this is strictly speculation. I don't know that.
No, that's fair.
But I just, you know, I watched him against Atlanta. I watched him against Pittsburgh. I watched him against Tampa Bay. I watched him go will his team to what should have been three wins. And when all the pressure was on. So, you know, we know who he is. We know who he is.
Yeah, he's an above average professional quarterback.
I'm not saying that he's as PFF showed, he was top 10, 8, 9, 10, mm-hmm. 11, 12. That's probably as good where the best you're going to get out of Andy Dalton. And that means there's a lot of guys behind him. Now, that discussion is a whole thing. They need to, and they have been trying to address that position. Look, they looked seriously at Lamar Jackson. They thought what most people thought. They didn't feel like he had the comprehension ability to be a full-time, long-time starter. And we'll find out, I guess, how long that lasts in Baltimore. They looked into Mason Rudolph. They've been aggressive in looking into quarterbacks early. You know, how much they were serious about Pat Mahomes or Deshaun Watson is hard to tell. That's one that everyone that drafted in the top 10 that year will ask themselves that question. But, they are serious because I think – The thing is, my opinion on Andy Dalton and the Bengals is I don't think that they can afford him. I don't think he makes as much sense at market value in 2021 as he does under his current contract. So you wonder if it feels like they should be and have been looking for the answer beyond that.
Right.
And that's where they need to look. And that's where they're at with it. Is understanding that by 2021, they have to have an answer there. Mm-hmm. Because then you're paying – what are you going to pay Andy Dalton? The Jags would take Andy Dalton right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of teams that would pay – Kirk Cousins, how much better than Andy Dalton is Kirk Cousins? They're basically the same. They give you the same chance of winning. Kirk Cousins is just a little wilier, a little more loose cannon, different styles, same result, same top 15 quarterback. Kirk Cousins got almost $90 million, fully guaranteed. You can't afford that. You got to build the team around him. So that, I think they know that. And I think that's what's going to be interesting over the next couple of years, is how that position evolves, if they have extension talks, what those talks look like. But all of this starts with whatever will happen after the season ends. Some good stuff on all of this is from Andy Benoit. So from MMQB, I want to bring him in. A really good discussion about this team, where they're at, what you've seen from this defense, and the word stale, what that means, and a lot of other good stuff. So I highly recommend this.
All right, I'm excited. Here is Andy Benoit. An old friend here. We haven't had him on the podcast yet this year, but one of our favorites to have on. I figure this, at this time of reckoning in the Bengals season, this is a good chance to talk to Andy Benoit, MMQB, Sports Illustrated, about what the heck has gone on with the Bengals. First of all, Andy, how you doing?
Hey, Paul, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing good. Good to have you back on. You know, you're constantly in the tape and watching every game and every team. When you watch the Bengals defense, the numbers state that it is the absolute worst. Is that not even close for you? And what do you think is the biggest reason that you have seen that this Bengals defense has been so bad this year?
Well, you have to start with the understanding that Marvin Lewis wants to play two deep zone coverage, or at least he's always employed coordinators that want to play two deep zone, and I'm sure that comes down from him. So it's a two deep zone based defense, and anytime you do that, you have to have pass rushers that dictate the action. You've got to make the offense play on your schedule, because otherwise your zone coverages will not hold up. There's no zone that's designed to hold up for more than three and a half seconds. So you're talking about the four-man pass rush, and it's anyone's guess on any given week what you're going to get from Cincinnati's four-man rush. There's Geno Atkins, who's pretty steady and pretty dominant at times, and then there's Carlos Dunlap, who's very talented but very unsteady. And then after that, it's a bunch of other unsteady guys. So it's hard to play the way they're playing and be consistent. And it's not like back when Mike Zimmer was there and they were dictating stuff with some of their double A gaps and their protection rules. They do it a little bit more traditionally now, and their guys just haven't been good enough to play that way.
I think I saw a few weeks ago, and this may have even been, this was at when they made the move away from Terrell Austin, you sort of just said how they had gotten stale. Was that kind of what you're talking about, and that there's not doing anything outside of the basic two deep and hope the front four get home? Was that a big problem, you think, early on in the year?
Well, I think so, because that word stale gets tossed around a lot. People are saying it about Mike McCarthy and Green Bay's offense right now. And I think we have to examine, what do we actually mean by this? It's easy to just say, oh, they're stale and they're not doing as much production. I'll give you a good example of what made me say that about Terrell Austin. In that Saints game, after Dalton threw that, I think it was a lollipop of an interception near the end of the first half, and the Saints got the long run back, they got the ball about the 25-yard line with 8 seconds to go, and they threw that touchdown to Michael Thomas as time expired. It was a cover two defense that the Bengals ran. The Saints had 8 seconds left. When you play cover two, you're leaving five defenders underneath, which means you want to rally and tackle. Well, if there's 8 seconds to go, they're not throwing the ball in the field anyway, because they don't have time to get to the line of scrimmage. So it was an end zone shot or nothing. And to call cover two on that is an atrociously bad call. My sense is cover two is probably their default coverage that they go to when they get to that part of the red zone. So there was no account for the situation or who they were facing or the circumstances. It was just, oh, that's our call. We play cover two. And I think there's a little bit too much of that going on. And if someone like me, who's sitting there just watching this from afar, can figure that out, then I guarantee you every offensive coordinator around the NFL figured it out, and they start designing plays to exploit it. So I think there's just a little bit too much predictability with some of those situational calls with the Bengals sometimes.
Did you see much change? I mean, I don't know if you've even gotten into the Browns debacle from Sunday yet, but did you see much change with Marvin Lewis taking over? Any difference schematically at all, or is it hard to really tell?
I haven't seen that Browns film yet. It's one I'll probably get to around Thursday or Friday this week, a little later in the week. Mm-hmm. I watched all the Ravens game, and I thought Lewis, you know, Paul, to be honest with you, I think they need to be more of a man-to-man defense. And they did some of that with Lewis in that Ravens game. That was a hard one, though, because you can't play man-to-man against a mobile QB. And Lewis found that out early when Lamar Jackson scrambled on their first snap of man coverage and gassed him for a big first down. So I would imagine, though, if we're talking about philosophical shifts on the defense and what needs to occur, they have three really good quality corners who have looked good in man-to-man this year when all three have been healthy. The problem, and here's where the discussion comes in, is their linebackers are not very good in coverage. And they're certainly not going to be good enough. Vontaze Burfict, for example, who I like him as a player, and I kind of like him personally, to be honest. He's not going to be able to run with an Alvin Kamara type of running back or even a Philip Lindsay type in Denver. So are you playing zone because your linebackers are limited? And if so, should you be doing that anyway, given that you have three highly achieving former first-round picks at cornerback? You know, it's just a discussion. It's just these are the kind of things that need to be sorted out. And I don't know if those discussions, I don't know to what degree they're going on in Cincinnati, but they need to be going on pretty in-depth this offseason.
Andy Dalton goes on IR this week after a ligament injury with his thumb. Jeff Driscoll will come in, but I'm curious your big picture assessment of Dalton. He's one of those guys that everyone says the same thing about. We know who he is right now. You know, he needs good players to be around him, and when he does have that, he can move an offense. He was very good in big moments this year when he was given the opportunity to be in them. What is your assessment of Andy Dalton through the lens of what's something that most people don't realize about him?
Well, his inconsistency stems from his pocket movement. Andy Dalton, we don't talk about him, but he's not very big. I believe he's 6'2", and he does not play big. So he's much closer to a Drew Brees than a, let's say, a Ben Roethlisberger style of QB. And so when you are like that, your pocket movement is an enormously important trait for any quarterback, but it's especially important for a guy like Dalton. And that's where his inconsistencies come. He does not have the arm or the size to consistently make throws when there are bodies around him or when his pocket gets muddy. So can he move within the pocket? And there's some times that he can, and there are other times that he can't. But this is, and it comes down to fundamentals and confidence, but this is what people mean within the NFL when they say you've got to have a certain type of task around Dalton. He's got to have an offensive line that keeps that pocket clean because the history says he's not going to move consistently well if it's a dirty pocket. And he's got to have receivers that get open within the context of the design. He's very good when he understands play design. And when everything goes on schedule, he is a very effective manager and quarterback and probably even better than a manager. But football in the NFL is an off-schedule sport much of the time. So when the pocket's messy or when the routes don't unfold the way that they're drawn up, that's when you get a little bit of the, you know, mystery Andy Dalton.
Yeah. What, you know, the Bengals have just kind of turned into a mess at this point. Is it easy, from your eye, from through the film's eye, is it pretty easy to see the depreciation with injury on this team and how that has had a ripple effect? Is that the most noticeable reason you think for their, you know, 5 of 6 now? Or do you think there's much more to it than that?
I would think there's much more to it. Almost every team has some sort of injury bug that bites them, and that's just the injury bug we know about. There are also players that are impacted by different injuries who are still out there, and we don't know in what way they're impacted, but that complicates the game. So, you know, I've kind of just learned to take injuries off the table when analyzing, which probably isn't fair, but it's the best you can do, and that's what the NFL demands. I think the bigger issue with the Bengals is some of the staleness overall. And it just feels like, I think I saw you this summer when I was there, Paul, and it just feels like a lot of the same old thing in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying what they're doing is wrong, but it was Bill Walsh who said it's wise to change your head coach every 10 years because same old often doesn't last very well.
Yeah. You said it. Andy, I appreciate it, man. Always good to catch up with you. What do you got cooking right now? What's the latest? Where can I send people to check out what you got going on?
Oh, I appreciate that. We got our MMQB podcast. Gary Gramling and I do it. We're on the feed twice a week, and then Albert Breer's got a show on our feed. So MMQB podcast is one of my favorite things we do because we get to sit here and talk football like we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it, Andy. You do incredible work. Make sure you go check out MQB Podcast and everything they're doing over there. You know, always great to catch up with you, Andy. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it, Paul. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
All right. Much thanks to Andy for joining. Just great stuff. I love having him on. Has a really good feel for the entire league, and which really helps with comparatively speaking. I mean, Bengals fans and understandable fans with their teams get very insular and think they're the only ones affected by certain things, only need to see certain things. And he does a great job of really having an in-depth knowledge of everything and helping compare it to what you're seeing. So anyway, thanks to him for joining. Really good stuff. Okay, let's hit some bits here. Today in Kanye. What's happening in Kanye today?
Kanye West's new private plane in a double-decker Boeing 747 that can seat 660 people.
Why would Kanye need 660 people on a plane? It's just him and the fam.
Well, he counts for like three or four people already.
Yeah, so that's we're halfway there.
Bouncing ideas off of himself at 30,000 feet. But there's been a backlash.
Is this a new one? He previously had a different private plane?
Yeah, this is a different one. It's bigger. It's better. It's double-deckered. But there's been a backlash. Just lavish expenditure. Fans are not happy with his private jet that can seat so many people.
Let him live that life. It's the good life. Let him live his life. I mean, how many Kardashians are there? They all need to be on this plane.
There's so much room for activities, though. You take out, you're take right. out seats.
There are very room for very much room.
Put in a bowling alley.
Yeah. At this point, you got to play the jet stream, not just the oil on the lanes. That's tough. That's tough. Tough going. You throw a 300 at 30,000 feet. That's the apex. Yeah, it is. You could fit an entire Family Feud set in there.
Oh man, Steve Harvey, you know he's can't wait to get on this airplane.
Kardashian, they love that show. They went on it.
Yeah, that was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I think they legitimately were huge fans of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love the idea of them all just sitting around watching. It's on my DVR.
Should get around one weekend night and play a little Family Feud.
One of my favorite BTSs we ever did was we played Family Feud with the specialists versus the BTS correspondents.
Oh, nice.
Clark Harris, it was Mike Nugent at the time, and Kevin Huber. We had the whole thing. We had the sounders. I had gone around the locker room. I was essentially Steve Harvey in this scenario. I'd gone around the locker room and asked a bunch of random questions to
get the
players to get them the whole setup for the survey. And the survey says, so the whole thing set up. It was great. It was one of my favorite
episodes. You did this live on remote?
Yeah, we did it live. At that point in time, we were at Moreline. Yeah.
What a party.
It was fun.
I would have had a few beverages watching that.
Yeah, everybody on the desk did. We drank live. It was great. I enjoyed it. Okay. Jurassic Park update. So here's where I feel like we're at. We said last week it was the moment in Jurassic Park where the daughter has the Jell-O jiggle. Thanks to you that sent a few things along on that. We appreciate it. And then we said if they lose to the Browns, it would be the moment that the Raptors are able to open the kitchen door, mm-hmm. right? It was suggested to me that actually the whole scenario is not even in play anymore. That they're now just the lawyer on the pooper. And T-Rex just eats him and throws him. I think it's actually never been more right on the path that
too.
We've been going.
Yeah.
This is the point where everyone is surrounded by the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what happens?
They get out of that kitchen.
Because no. Oh. They get that once they've gotten out of the kitchen.
Okay.
Like what happened Sunday was just the pure terror of being chased by two Raptors in a kitchen. Technically you're still alive. Right? Technically you're still going. But now you're in the main hub area and you all have your backs to each other in the middle and the Raptors have you surrounded. There is no way out. There is absolutely – everyone dies in this scenario. Unless
should.
Unless previously we had said that the old man was Mike Brown. Mike Brown is the T-Rex.
He's the T-Rex
right. Who comes in and saves Marv and Hugh and Andy and everybody that has their backs to each other. And he saves them by eating the Raptors. And the Raptors, I think more than I thought about it, are actually you, the fans. You, the fans. You, the angry pitchforks and lanterns that are fed up and have had enough, are the Raptors. You have them surrounded. And only one thing really can save the crew, and that is Mike Brown, the T-Rex.
Busting in. I actually got this text message from my guy. He is my Photoshop fixer.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the text message was, "Dude, I'm having a hard time getting Baker Mayfield's head on this Raptor's body." I said, "You got to keep working, keep grinding,
keep grinding. You shovel by shovel."
Because I sent you a pretty nice Photoshop.
You did.
Of Marvin in the kitchen.
Marvin in the kitchen. But that was a good.
We were going to take it up another notch. So I'm going to see if you can get Mike Brown's head on a T-Rex, but I'm telling you that the That's human hard. To dinosaur transfer
tough
has proven to be difficult.
Very, very difficult. There's no doubt about it. Anyway, all right, that about wraps us up here for BBP. We will be back. The Deuce is back this week. I guess we'll be previewing the Broncos game and Jeff Driscoll.
We'll be talking about Marvin and Hugh.
Forever and ever to the end of time, and more about dinosaurs. And drunk dudes running on the field. I feel like you're just – this is why you need to stay with us. We're only going to get more ridiculous as we have less to talk about, okay?
Yeah, we have less stakes, less expectations.
I wish we had actual stakes.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, I'm actually kind of hungry right now. I think about that.
We just got nuggets.
All I have is a few morsels that I made into a nugget that I need to eat. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Of course, BTS, Darquez Denard, our guest on BTS this week. Dude, the story of him and what he's doing off the field with the Denard difference and helping the family. Oh, my God. What an unbelievable story. So make sure you check out that BTS. We'll have audio of that on The Deuce this week. So make sure you check that out. And everything else, Cincinnati.com, the Inquirer Bengals app. Subscribe. Help us. Support local journalism. We need you, or else the BBP will go away, and I'll lose my job, and you'll have to help me out. You'll see me like begging on the street, or drinking at Mad Tree and being sad, or 50 West. I'll be at every brewery just trying to convince people. Like, we'll talk about Bengals for money, right? that's what my sign will say.
Bengals rants for money.
Bengals rant, yeah. Allow me to rant on the Bengals for like a buck. It's like that's my skill that I have at this point. The kids that go out and are like unbelievable on like the upside down can buckets. Mm-hmm. I'm just a ranter about Bengals topics. And I hope people drop a nickel in, or you could support local journalism and give me a mic. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you later.